So we are continuing. This will be the last discussion, at least for a while, on the pastimes and the messages that come with these pastimes of Lord Ram. Of course, each of the pastimes have many messages, and each of the messages have messages within the messages, because life can continue to unravel itself deeper and deeper the more we look for these things. It's like it's so amazing when you actually look at the way this universe, or just even the way your body is structured, how intricate it is. And the more you study it and try to understand it, the more you realize there's more to know. So philosophy and principles go really deep and deeper and deeper, and we can learn so much. Life is about learning, life is about doing what you learn, and life is about achieving the goal of what you do, ultimately. So the process is to learn. Learning comes by hearing, and hearing comes, brings one to the eagerness to learn, to apply what we've learned. So there's many messages here that I haven't. When one is proud or is a victim of pride and arrogance, one cannot take good advice. When one thinks they know, even when one receives good advice, one will not be able to recognize it. Ravana, although he was such an evil person, he was surrounded by many well-wishers. You know, he was liked by many. And people had his own best interests at heart, more so than he could understand. Therefore, many times he would receive counsel from his ministers or from his wife or even from his brothers. And there's three kinds of leaders, three kinds of people who accept advice. There's a leader who, in all the important decisions, always looks towards others for advice just to see how much more he can learn. And he takes advice from those people who he knows can give advice. And therefore, he's always eager to accept advice and to follow that advice. There's others who look for advice, and if they like it, they take it. If they don't like it, they don't take it. That's the second class leader. Third class leader doesn't look for any advice, just does what he wants. Ravana, well, he used to go back and forth between second and third class. He would solicit advice, but when the advice didn't go along with what he felt was the best advice, he would reject it. He was given a lot of advice. When he stole Sita, he received advice from many, even some of his generals, well-wishers, brother, and of course his wife. That, you know, she's the wife of another man. You know, you have so many queens. Why are you eager and greedy for this other queen? She belongs to someone else, so this will be a cause of great disharmony in your life. But because he was proud, and because he was absorbed in the mood of sensual enjoyment, which causes one to have pride when one is very much, what we say, successful. He had a lot of things to enjoy at his disposal at any time. Nice food, nice drink, nice bedsteads, beautiful women, followers, praise, the best of artisans, dancers, artists. Everything was there in the material opulence in a grandiose way. So there was no lack of opportunities for sense gratification for Ravana. But still, because he was proud and wanted more, and he couldn't understand the simple advice, this is another person's wife, and therefore you're creating a great offense. And he was given counsel by people who were very close to him and were interested in his own welfare. So this is very important for leadership, is to take advice and at the same time understand the importance of taking advice too. And that helps one to see things in a broader way and also to remain, what we say, in the mood of a servant and not in the mood of a person who thinks that I am the leader. A leader never thinks they're the leader. A person in a position of leadership thinks they're in a position that, in this position of leadership, I can serve. He doesn't think himself a leader. He thinks himself a servant in a position of leading others. That's an actual leader. I remember many... It was about 10 years ago. It was actually the year 2005. And the month was October. The date was the 16th, I think, of October. We held a memorial service for His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami. And this was a few months after he had departed. And this was in a city called Detroit. And so many people came, and many people from the outside, respectable people, came. And there was one senator, a local senator from the area, he also came. And so different people had chances to speak and glorify Maharaj. So he got up and spoke. And he spoke something really quite significant. He said, I'm a senator, you know, I'm a politician, I have my clientele. But when I was reading Bhaktitirtha Maharaj's book on leadership, he kept referring to the leader is actually a servant, and he should serve in the mood, he should lead in the mood of servant. He said this was really revolutionary in my mind. I was thinking leader means to lead, and servants means one who serves the leader. So he was kind of incredulous, and he expressed his incredulousness when he was speaking, how this was revolutionary. But we understand from Shastra that in any position you are, you're only a servant. You can never change your identity as servant. You can change how you serve, but you're always in the position of servant, whether you're a guru, a temple president, a Sankirtan leader, or even if you're, you know, the leader of the pujari, whatever. In other words, if you have a position to and guide others, you're still a servant, that's all. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was asked, how many disciples do you have? He says, I have no disciples. They are all my masters. I learn something from each and every one of them. So what he was saying, in the role of a spiritual master, I learn from those who are my disciples, who are teaching me also. So he was giving a nice indication that one should never think they can never learn. You see that in the material world, where people, the more higher they go, the more they think they know everything, and they can only give to others what they know, and therefore no one can give to them. No one can tell them what to do like that. And that becomes a problem. And then what happens? One becomes proud. When he becomes proud, you make mistakes. When you make mistakes, you commit offenses. When you commit offenses, then you usually fall from your position. And that's what happened to Ravana. Although much good advice was given, even during the battle of Lanka, when many of his major generals were being killed and his armies were being wiped out, and Ram in a strong monkey's army was overpowering these Rakshasas who are you know, very powerful fighters with full weapons. The monkeys only had trees and rocks. That's all they had for weapons. But still, they were defeating these Rakshasas. When he was advised by even some of his generals that, you know, you should just give back Sita, live happily in your kingdom of Lanka. This is the only thing you have to do. This is the reason for the war. Couldn't hear good advice. So, therefore, in the role of a leader, one should not only take advice, one should seek advice. One should seek advice. Sometimes Prabhupada would do that. He would ask some of his servants or his assistants, do you think this is a good plan? Or what do you think? We want to maybe preach like this over here or there. What is your idea? So he would ask his devotees what their ideas basically on the way he wanted to. Of course, he gave directions, but he also gave advice. He also accepted their advice many times. So that's a leader. He's thinking of the welfare of the people he leads, not so much of playing the role of a leader. His concern is about them and not so much his position like that. So Ravana was, couldn't take advice, and when he did ask for advice, if he didn't like his advice, he would argue. Or if he liked some of the advice he get, he would take it. But it had to be in line with his plans. So that was Ravana. So he's arrogant. Spiritual progress means simplicity and humility. If they are lacking, we won't listen, thinking we know better. That is Ravana. When we think we know, we are not willing to listen to good counsel. Ravana was thinking Vibhishan was disloyal in taking the side of Ram, but he was disloyal to Kuvera, his cousin brother. So he was imposing his own, we say, reflected mind on his brother, who was his well-wisher. Oh, this is a little bit about arrogance in leadership. One cannot understand one's well-wishers. And it's also interesting that even well-wishers come in the form of signs within the environment. When one is in a position of leadership and is trying to lead, Krishna arranges sometimes for little messages to come in different ways to help guide and instruct and enlighten that leader. If we're looking for that, we will see that. We will see them and also benefit from them. Like that. So it's an art to be in a position of having to give guidance and at the same time assimilate other guidance in order to give better guidance. It all comes back to the same principle. The welfare of those you lead. And therefore the Shastras are very strong in warnings that anyone who takes a position must be able to do the service. Otherwise, they will, what we say, create problems and cause great calamity on themselves. Just like the Manu Samhita explains that a president of a country takes on 1/6 of the karma of the country. So if he doesn't lead properly, then in the sinful the citizens are committing sins, he gets 1/6 of that sinful reaction. And if they are pious and religious, he also gets that benefit in the same proportion. So sometimes you see leaders nowadays, they don't last in office very long. And that's one of the reasons they're, at the end of their reign in office, they usually are so much devastated that they can't wait to get out. or nobody likes them anymore. Modern day leaders. So these are some simple things. Ravana was thinking his wife, Mandodari, was envious of Sita. But actually, he was envious of Ram. A lot of times this happens. It's not always, but most of the time when we see someone in a certain way, we're actually reflecting our own consciousness onto that person. It may not be reflective of that person's nature or consciousness, but a reflection of our own way of seeing. Like, call it the mirror of the mind, like that. Sometimes we see that, how if you're happy, you sort of attract a lot of happy people towards you. If you're miserable, same kind of people are around. If you're miserable, everybody else looks miserable. If you're happy, people look happy too. Like that. It's called the mirror of the mind. How the mind reflects what's inside, outside. So one should be careful to see through Shastra. By seeing through what we say knowledge given by God through Shastra and by Guru through Shastra, we can see things clearly. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Svapakecha Pandita Samadarshan. Samadarshan means, darshan means see and sama means equal. One who is actually in knowledge sees all other living entities equally. What does he see? He sees within the heart of all living entities, God, Krishna is there. Therefore, though he sees the body, and sometimes he also sees the distinctions of the body, he focuses on the essence that every soul is part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, as a devotee of Krishna, every soul is what we say. What would be a good word? An object of service. A chance to serve Krishna by serving that soul. Ravana couldn't see that. He always wanted everyone to serve him and serve him in such a way that fulfill his lusty desires. He was, in two words, he was what we people call an egomaniac. He had big ego, but it wasn't full-blown. That was Ravana. So this is the beauty of the Ramayana. It has the highest spiritual, moral, and principles, and at the same time it has the most lowest and degraded material activities. And it has everything in between, too. It's a beautiful, I highly recommend devotees who haven't read the Ramayana that you're missing something wonderful. You should read this, you'll learn, you'll find so much in there. It's the story of the life of God, but it's also a story of our own life on how we can, practice those qualities in Krishna consciousness that are more and more conducive to our spiritual advancement. Okay, so, and I'll mention one more and then we'll take some questions. To get across the ocean was 800 miles. So there was a plan to make a bridge. So they did. And the monkeys were throwing rocks into the water, but the rocks were sinking. Because rocks don't float. Rocks sink. But what Ram was doing, or what everyone was doing under Ram's, was writing the name of Ram on the rock. And as soon as they wrote the name of Ram on the rock would float. And then a beautiful bridge came about because the whole bridge was made of the names of Ram. It was 800 miles long and 88 miles wide because there was really that many million. There were millions of monkeys who were in Ram's army. Millions. So it's written here, big or small, the stones floated by writing Lord Ram's name. big or small, we can swim across the ocean of birth and death by chanting the holy names of the Lord. So this material world is seen and compared in many ways as an ocean. And to cross the ocean, it's not so easy. In fact, it's very difficult. Even on the best boat, you don't know if you're going to make it, because the ocean is very unpredictable and can be very turbulent and sometimes very dangerous. But if one is chanting the holy names of the Lord, one can cross the ocean of birth and death, as it says, just as a person steps over a small puddle of water. In other words, the ocean of samsara sinks to the size of a little puddle when one chants the holy names of the Lord. This is the means to get across the ocean. So these rocks would never have floated, but only when the Lord's name was on the rocks that they floated across. And then they had the bridge to Lanka, like that. So we can glorify the holy name of the Lord enough. Any of our statements about the glories of the holy name fall way short of the actual glories of the holy name. Sometimes we, due to our own experiences of chanting, we're not feeling inspired to chant. We're not feeling enthusiastic when we're chanting. But it doesn't matter. The holy name remains pure in all cases. We just have to continue to practice and adjust in such a way that we can approach the holy name in the right way. Approaching the holy name in the right way is two things. Attention and devotion, but it also means that if we're still on the shore on one side, we cannot cross the ocean to the other side. We have the means, but we're still wanting to stay on the shore of the material life. So hanging on to material desires and at the same time chanting the holy name is like trying to cross the ocean in a stone boat with nothing written on the boat. It'll sink. So devotees sometimes wonder why I'm not getting the bliss. We're still hanging on to material life. We're still trying to enjoy this world. And therefore, we can't really approach the holy name in the proper way. Although benefit is always there in any form of chant, still, when one no longer looks to material life for satisfaction, happiness, or fulfillment of one's desires, then one can actually chant. One can actually chant. Then the holy name will take you across the ocean of birth and death. In other words, the holy name will take you to the lotus feet of Krishna. So, therefore, when we mention the offenses to the holy name, we mention the 10th offense, which is to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions. So, therefore, after receiving instructions about the holy name, we should understand that the holy name can fulfill all desires completely, perfectly, and eternally. But we have to have that faith, and at the same time, don't look back towards the material life for anything. Material life cannot give us what we're actually looking for, although we may think so. It's not a disqualification to have material desires. It's a disqualification to try to fulfill material desires. Material desires don't simply go away by not wanting to have them. They go away through the process of purification of the heart in the process of devotional service, which is a gradual process. It takes time. But dealing with those material desires means not trying to fulfill them. Each time we reject our attempt, every time we say no to the opportunities to fulfill material desires, we make more progress in our Krishna consciousness. So therefore, the monkeys were throwing the rocks into the ocean. They wanted to get across. They didn't want to stay on the safe shore of, you might say, India. They wanted to get across to victory over what we say, Maya, represented by Ravana. Okay, so any questions about arrogance or about the holy name, pride? Yes.
Just wanted to ask you about this material desire. Is it, for example, if we have a desire for a car or a house or a fancy clothes or a computer, but with the intention to use it in Krishna consciousness in service, like to buy a nice home to install deities to make temple, or buy a car to serve devotees, drive up and down, or something like this. Does it still make a desire to be a material and like an obstacle? Or?
It's a mixed desire. It's still not pure. It's better than what you say, just wanting it for yourself, but it's still not pure because Krishna doesn't need any of these things. In other words, you like him and you want to use him in Krishna's service. If you have him, then use him. But if you're going out to get them and then use them, that's another thing. Whatever you have, you don't have to get rid of. You simply have to use. But if you're thinking to get more, like some people want to go back to school so they can have an education so they can use that skill in Krishna consciousness. But that's, I mean, if your spiritual master gives you that instruction, then that's fine. But if you think, well, this is the way I have to go, then you may be entering into an area of what we say diversion, wasting time. Because again, we have to remember one thing, and this is very important. Krishna needs nothing. Anything we do in devotional service is not required by the Lord. But He wants our devotion. So service means the means for offering devotion. And to serve the instructions of the spiritual master means to maintain the society. So the society has to be maintained. So we have buildings, we have cars, we have various types of activities in order to create a society that is unified in bringing spiritual life to others. It's required, especially in this age of Kali. Prabhupada used to say, I could have came and sat underneath a tree and chanted Hare Krishna. Why did I build so many temples? Because it would just to attract all of you. It wasn't necessary for me, but in order to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to do these things. These temples are not for us, they're for the people out there to come and learn about Krishna, to serve Krishna, to learn how to chant. So we're maintaining, we're the caretakers of the temple. And we have to caretake it on behalf of the spiritual master who wants others to come and become devotees. So your question is, if you have that desire, you should ask your immediate superior for clarification and for permission. In some cases, these things are all right, but usually they're mixed. Usually they're mixed. Yes.
I have a question. Please come ask me. In the Ishopanishad, it said that we should be happy with whatever comes.
Ishavasham idam sarvam. Yat kinchat yam tega chega tena jak tena bunji taha magridaha kasiswadhanam. Yeah. You should be happy with your quota. That's what it says.
And this you should desire for more than what you get, but should you also reject what comes?
What comes of his own accord? Naturally, no. You take and use in Krishna's service. Or if you need it to maintain your body, then you may do that. Whatever Krishna sends without any extra endeavor on your part is his gifts to you. And take it, use it, and for service, and if you need it, if you need something, he gives you what you need for yourself, and at the same time he gives you more, so you can use it. So, does that answer your question? Not sure. So, things that come by their own accord are coming by the arrangement of the Lord, or you might even say your own karma, but either way, it's Krishna's arrangement.
So, for desire more, it's an obstacle, but what we get,
For grihasthas, they have to make some arrangement to keep their household together. So they have to make some endeavor to maybe work and to take care of the family. So they are allowed that extra endeavor to maintain. But for brahmacharis, zero. Brahmacharis are simply dependent on the temple, that's all. On the mercy of the spiritual master, that's all. What do you need? What do you want? I can help you. You got a place to sleep? Yeah? Prasad? Okay. Pretty good. Got enough clothes? Chai. That's all you need. Brahmachari means simple. That way you can spend your time studying the books. That's what the main principle of brahmachari life. Brahmachari means student. Student means to study. You can spend time studying the books, learning the books, and then becoming a preacher. You're forced into a simple living style, but it's actually beneficial. And of course, if you decide to change ashrams later, then you can move into then a more, when we say, complicated lifestyle. But some of us are too complicated to be simple. And some of us are too simple to be complicated. So you have to see. Simplicity it feeds humility nicely, and simplicity also allows us to focus on the goal more and more. Simplicity in everything you do, in the way you live, in the way you dress, in the way you speak. One devotee in our movement used to say, what do you need? You need three things. You need prasadam. You need the holy name. And you need nice relationships with other devotees. If you have these three things, you have everything. That's for, and because of grihasthas may need a material arrangement to take care of their grihastha life. But that's it. The thing is, time is precious, and if we spend too much time either getting material things or making arrangements to live, you know, beyond our needs, we're wasting the time that we could be using for hearing, chanting, reading, studying, learning more. There's so much to learn in Krishna consciousness. There's so much. I mean, this one, if you could learn everything in the Bhagavatam, it would take you at least how many lifetimes? Prabhupada said it'll take you 1,500 years to learn everything in the Bhagavatam. So how many lifetimes is that? Just the Bhagavatam. So, I mean, we got a wealth of transcendental philosophical knowledge sitting at our doorstep here. And there's so much. Just like deity worship. How much can you do in deity worship? You can, sky's the limit. You can do more and more. There's a whole science of deity worship. Cooking, how much can you learn in cooking? Right? The more you learn, the more you realize you have more to learn. So each of the sciences that make up bhakti, that's part of bhakti, so much. But if we waste our time collecting things and trying to, you know, live in a very outside of our needs, then we miss the opportunity for all these other things. Brahmachari means light. Light in the sense of weight. You don't have much to carry. It's the ashram that is at the most advantage of the four ashrams is brahmachari. You're told what to do. You're given your food. You have a place to stay. Everything's provided for you. All you have to do is focus on your service. It's easy. Provided the false ego doesn't get in the way. No? You look pretty happy, so you must be doing the right thing. Simple living, high thinking. Even in grihastha life, we have to understand how to live in that ashram and not get too much caught up with all the extra things that come with that lifestyle. Time is precious. It's the most precious thing. Any other questions? Yes.
It is stated that we watch Chinese holy life and simultaneously we attach to material things. But sometimes we recommend the person, if he is attached, just chant Hare Krishna and it's attachment to God. No, thank you for commenting.
We don't tell you to stop chanting. We say it's not going to make your chanting advance. You should chant in any condition of life. What is that verse? Asarva kama kama uva moksha kama udaradi stivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether you're full of material desires, you have no material desires, or you're what we say fixed in what we say. So, what is it? No material desires, full of material desires. What's the last one? You're on a liberated platform. In any three of those, chant the holy name. Yeah, no material desires, full of material desires, or desiring liberation. Yeah, chant the holy name. It's for everybody. But you should realize that, you know, as I'm chanting, I should be thinking how to get rid of my material desires. Two ways to get rid of material desires. One is to fulfill them. But that's not the way to do it. It's just don't act on them. When you don't act on them, they go away after some time. It's like an itch. Material desires are like an itch. And if you scratch the itch, what happens? It gets, for a minute it goes down, and then after some time the itch returns stronger. So you have to go through that little bit of what we say, austerity, acting on knowledge. Oh, I have these desires, but I know they're not good for me. Let me focus more on devotional service. By diverting our mind to the positive, we forget about the negative. But the mind wants to dwell on the negative. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna.
When do we really start chanting?
When does chanting actually begin? On the liberated platform. When you have no more, there's namaparad, and that's chanting with offense. There's, what is the next one? It's called namabas. When you're reducing your offenses and gradually the taste of the holy name starts to come through. And then there's the next stage is there's no offenses left, offenseless chanting completely, and then the highest stage is pure chanting. So go through the 10 offenses, including the 11th offense, and see if you're committing any of those. If you are, then you're still chanting with offense. If these offenses are reducing, that means the light of the holy name is starting to manifest. You get a little, you're getting a taste. Not a taste, enough taste to keep you enthusiastic to chant. Namabhas is pretty good. But higher than that is complete offenseless chanting, when there's no offenses left and one is tasting the sweetness in the holy name. And then, of course, pure chanting is in you're chanting in ecstasy, you're chanting in love of God. And then one is exhibiting ecstatic symptoms when they chant.
Person who is materially exhausted can chant sincerely.
Yeah. A kinchana gochara, it's called.
So we should, we have so many material desires, but when do we become materially exhausted?
When? Prabhupada used to say, this process can take you millions of years or one moment. In other words, the strength of your desire will move you along. The stronger your desire is, the faster you get the results. Everything's based on desire. Desire is not something static. By desiring, you actually act on that desire. So there's certain symptoms of a person who's, you know, enthusiastic. They're not eager to sleep. They're not eager to talk nonsense. They're always using their time for study, for chanting, for reading, for serving. These are symptoms. These can be symptoms that are observed in a person who's enthusiastic. Doesn't want to waste time. Study the nectar of devotion and you'll see what are the symptoms of the different stages of bhakti. Don't get discouraged by where you are. Be encouraged about where you're going. And so, we like to think we're okay, but it's better not to think like that. Better to think you're KO'd instead of okay. Okay means okay, KO'd means knocked out. In other words, that means one always is dependent on the mercy of the Lord and is always thinking, without that mercy, I'll never make any advancement. So therefore, one is eager for the mercy and figures out ways to get the mercy. Like you just were in India, right? So you got a lot of mercy. So that's one way, going to holy places, getting mercy, taking the dust of the holy places, the sadhus there. And that's one way to get mercy. Another way to mercy is to get as much mahaprasadam as you can. Well, you know, within limits. Mahaprasadam is very merciful. mercy is that when I finish my 16 rounds, I should think, why not 17? Let me chant more. You finish your 16 rounds or whatever, and you have some time left, you think, let me chant some more. Why not? Prabhupada said, just pick up your beads anytime and chant. You don't have to think, well, I finished my rounds, that means that door is closed for the day. I need to figure out what else to do. No. You can chant anytime, always. 16 rounds is just to get you started, really. If you don't have a numerical vow in chanting, you won't really increase the quality of your chanting. The numerical vow gives us a foundation as a requirement, and that induces us to chant more. There's a purpose for a numerical vow, not just, oh, I got to do this number. No, it fixes you in the process of chanting and helps you to increase. Like that. Did any devotees chant extra rounds today? Yes. Beyond your normal? 1, 2, 3, anybody else? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, pretty good. I won't ask the next question. How many didn't finish their rounds yet? Stay away from the midnight japa program. That's the worst. Trying to chant late at night. Chanting early in the morning sets the stage for the quality of the day ahead of you. The earlier you chant, the more you will find your day will be more Krishna conscious. That's a fact. Like that. Okay, any other questions? What time is it? Oh, I got the clock is over here. I'm sorry. I'm looking over there. Okay. 7:55, right? Yeah. There was another question? Yes.
I was like thinking about solution to cross the ocean of samsara, the holy name, when we chant. I see when we go with airplane to London, the many people they are chanting on their wrists, like Christians, and I see this on airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, when it's really, when you're in a situation that you don't know what will happen. When you go with airplane, it depends on the pilot.
Yeah, you're risking your life. that's a fact. Every once in a while there's a crash. I have to fly a lot. It's okay.
Then I was thinking how holy name is always our opportunity to be conscious of Krishna when you are in problems, and then disconnect people. And this is so nice.
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, you kind of feel you're together in the problem. So even though they're Christians, they're chanting. Huh? Yeah. That's nice. That's a very universal vision. Well, you should understand one thing, and this is very important. This world is dangerous wherever you are. Whether you're in an airplane or, we read about incidents where people have fallen out of bed and died. I've heard of that a couple of times. And just roll out of bed and land on their head or something, and that's it. Roll out of bed, land on your head, and then you're dead, right? Even if your name is Fred, it's... or Ed, or Ted. Now your body is just like lead.
It is funny, it's not sad.
Very good, thank you very much. Yeah, so life is like really unpredictable. In America, one of the biggest ways people were dying was they were choking on meat in restaurants. People would be eating meat. This was long ago. This is kind of reduced a lot lately, but they would be eating their meat so fast that they could get stuck on their throat and then they would suffocate. So even while eating, you know. So, you know, death is all around us. It's everywhere. But for a devotee knows. It's Krishna's there. He protects me. But still, one should understand that this world is full of dangers. Padam, padam, ya, vi, padam. At every step, there is danger. So therefore, the way to overcome dangers is to remember Krishna. If you're remembering Krishna, you are protected. Okay, is there anything else? Ten. 9, 8, 7, 6. Oh, we got it.
Leadership?
Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj has written a series of books on leadership. Two of them, which is Leadership 1 and Leadership 2. And in both, in the second one he takes a lot from the Mahabharata. The first one is a lot of general principles. And he also lists 17 qualities of a leader. A leader has to lead from within and not from without. He leads by his qualities. He also has an understanding of how to do things. But it's his qualities that manifest his leadership and not so much his position. They say you should be able to command respect instead of demanding respect. That's a real leader. Oh, I'm a leader, therefore you should respect me. No. But when one is a leader and they're leading and they have the qualities, people want to follow. So yeah, lead from the inside out rather from the outside in. That's one of the things. If you want to be a good leader, especially a temple president, you should not answer your phone. We lost our temple president, he's gone. No, it's not you don't answer your phone. You have a jai sisi pancha tattva ki jai. You don't answer your phone all day. That's one of the qualities of a good leader. Because you never get anything done. People will call you anytime. So you just note the calls and then at one point you call back. So answering phones really takes away. I know some temple presidents that don't even carry phones because they just wind up answering phones all day. People will call. So that's a material principle, but it's a practical thing. Learn how to use that phone where it doesn't use you. I'm sure you have that experience, right? A lot of people just call just to talk. Prabhupada was in his New York when they first started. So they got Prabhupada on a phone, nice phone. So Prabhupada's there. The first day, he gets the call. This is 12 o'clock at night. He's doing his translation. He gets a call. Yes? Swamiji? Yes. How are you? You're calling at 12 o'clock to ask how I am? Click. The next day, Prabhupada said, please remove the phone. They took it out. True story. So, you see, phones seem to be a legal way to bother you. It's an authorized way to cause you disturbances, and you think it's okay. I remember the days when the phones didn't have, like, the indication of the callers on the other side. Oh my, you remember those days? You don't know who was calling. And sometimes you get the craziest calls. Then I think because of that, they start putting, you know, this indications on. And phone companies, when they make phones, they create these ringtones that force you to answer them. Yeah, it's psychologically, they do that. As soon as you hear the ring of the phone, the whole world stops, right? So important. So a leader should know how to monitor his outside activities in such a way that he can focus on his service. Okay. Another question? 10, 9, 8, 7. Speak about the qualities. Speak about? Of a leader, one of the most important qualities of a leader is to empower others to do things. If he does everything himself, he's not a good leader. He should know how to engage others in doing various types of service, thereby engaging them in such a way that they advance and then things also get along. Not only does he choose people to do things, but he also empowers them, encourages them, and monitors them to make sure that they're doing it nicely, and if they need anything in their service, he also helps them. A good leader does nothing. Prabhupada says there's four kinds of people: lazy intelligence, active intelligence, lazy fool, and active fool. The lowest is the active fool, because he's very active and whatever he does causes problems to everybody. You can see which one you fit into. The next one is the lazy fool. He's a fool, but he's lazy. He only hurts himself. Then higher than that is the active intelligence. He's intelligence, very active, does a lot of things. But the highest is lazy intelligence. Who gets everybody else to do everything. Prabhupada said, that's Krishna. So, that's written. So a good leader will empower other people to do things. And that way he can do more things, and by empowering others to do, that way a lot of things go on. Do you have some time? I got something for you to do. just kidding. But he just doesn't give the service. He makes sure the devotee has everything they need for the service. And he checks on every once in a while to make sure that the devotee is happy and that service is going on nicely. He's a facilitator, not so much a doer. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about leadership. You missed that one. Oh, you recorded. Yeah. Okay, is that it? Looks like that's it. 10987654321. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Ramayan ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Hare Gaur.